Okay, on three, we'll do five.
Okay.
You ready? Five.
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 Four.
Four.
Three.
Three.
Two.
One.
That sucks.
This is Infants on Thrones. The philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the core.
Hey everybody, it's your buddy Matt, one of the Infants. In this episode, we take on Hale Entertainment's crown jewel, The Singles Ward, and see what, if anything, it teaches us about Mormon culture and Mormon film. In this podcast, you'll hear from me.
Randy, Celestial yeah. Kingdom material, baby.
Bob?
I don't know why I'm cackling as if it's, like, exciting.
Glenn.
Oh.
Validate us.
Tom. You want me to basically fit a stereotype? Okay.
Jesse.
Yeah, I know.
Is that everyone? Man, that's a lot of freaking people. So that those out there who haven't seen the film can be on equal footing with those that have, here's a summary of The Singles Ward. Jonathan Jordan is a good-looking, single, aspiring writer turned stand-up comedian who lives in Utah and likes to wear shiny metallic shirts. And he's a Mormon. Jonathan used to be the typical Peter Priesthood. He served a mission, went to the Lord's University, and got married. He did everything he was taught. He didn't watch R-rated movies. He helped ward members move, and he attended his ward temple nights. This ideal existence went to Carthage when Jonathan came home one afternoon. What he found shocked him. Behind closed doors, he walked in on his celestial bride with one hand caressing a dirty thing and another even dirtier thing stuck in her mouth.
Oh, come on.
Inappropriate.
That's right, boys and girls. This future mother of spirits was holding a beer and smoking a cigarette.
Say it ain't so.
She informed her head of household that she doesn't even think that the church is true and leaves our hero in the worst possible place, single and in his mid-20s. Jono initially lives the life of a pariah as a single man in a family ward.
Can I just interject here with the joke that he tells?
Being a divorced member of the church, I felt like people were looking at me like, hey, our ancestors were able to handle four or five wives. You can't even keep one? What's the problem?
But soon he ends up in a singles ward and learns what any inspired person who reads the end sign already knows. The only thing worse than being a nursery leader in a loveless, miserable marriage is being single in the Mormon church. In what's perhaps an example of reality imitating art, if singles ward can be considered art, back in April of 2007, President James E. Faust, then second counselor in the first presidency of the Mormon Church, authored an article that was published in The Ensign, a monthly magazine that's published by the Mormon Church. He writes,
some years ago, I was consulted by a woman who desired a divorce from her husband on grounds which, in my opinion, were justified. After the divorce was concluded, I did not see her again for many years. A chance meeting with her on the street was very surprising. The years of loneliness and discouragement were evident in her once beautiful face. After passing a few pleasantries, she was quick to say that life had not been rich and rewarding for her, and that she was tired of facing the struggle alone. Then came a most startling disclosure, which, with her permission, I share. Said she, bad as it was, if I had to do it over again, knowing what I do now, I would not have sought the divorce. This is worse.
So in addition to calling this Miss Havisham-like figure not beautiful, this once prophet in the Mormon Church confirms what the singles ward taught us, that it just might be worse to be single in the Mormon Church than stay in a bad marriage. So without a wife to keep his natural man at bay, Jonathan gives in to all sorts of passions and appetites. He watches inappropriate movies such as Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, and even an uncut version of Newsies. He even drinks the hard stuff. That's right, tea. But perhaps most damaging, he becomes inactive. After 6 months of slippery slope behavior, he's content with being a lazy sinner, rejecting the things he knows to be true. The singles ward love bombs him to try to reactivate him, but he knows all the tricks and is immune to their insincere efforts. But that all changes when he drives his three friends, Eldon, Dallin, and Hiram, while
could
making
you get three more Mormon names? I mean, seriously.
Yeah, Romney.
Eldon, Dallin, and Hiram. That's just laying it on a little too thick for me.
Okay, yeah, Jesse.
Hey, hey, watch it. Okay, that's biblical.
Jesse Smith.
Jesse Smith, if that is your real name.
While making a phone call, he runs into Cammie Giles. She's kind of 80s hot.
80s hot.
Right? I mean, she's not really hot. She's kind of got that 80s hot.
And she's got the pseudo-Mormon modesty, you know. Like, everybody else is wearing oversized t-shirts, but she's wearing very form-fitting dresses.
She has a nice rack.
She convinces him to dance, but they both eventually realize that he was a real layman to her on the phone a few days earlier. John, these jokes are basically the type of stuff that's thrown in the film.
Did you say he was a real layman?
A real layman, yeah.
Okay, what does that mean?
You know, like a dick. Know? It's a Book of Mormon reference.
Okay.
That's
Carthage
what makes it funny.
Okay.
I'm referencing something that only the six of us and another 3 million people in the world would actually get. Jonathan decides to return to church and other church activities in order to woo this Molly. This forces Jonathan to deal with all the weirdness that is the single Mormon culture. He eventually convinces Cammie that she might have seen his smile somewhere before, and she reminds him that the church is true. But Cammie has her own first world problem to deal with. You see, like all girls who are unmarried at 21 in Utah, Cammie's torn between the man she might love and going on a mission. She gets her call and rushes off to one of Jonathan's comedy gigs to tell him. Jonathan pulls out the classic make fun of smoking bit at a bar, and for some reason, it bombs.
Take Marlboro cigarettes, for instance. For every pack you smoke, you get these little coupons called miles. I don't know why they don't use a term a little more conducive to smoking, like tumors or something. I think what they should do is they should plant all tobacco products near a nuclear power plant, so that when you smoke, you can get cancer, but you can get treatment all at the exact same time. Come on.
Worried he's lost the crowd, he goes all Judas on himself and goes to his can't-miss material.
You guys are looking at me like a Mormon watching an R-rated movie. Oh, no, sure, let's make fun of the Mormons. That's funny. Oh, believe me, there's a lot to make fun of. You know, they recently took a poll of the excitement level at 300 of the nation's universities. Yeah, BYU came in number 300. I went to BYU, I must confess. It's true. I studied theater there. I did a Mormon adaptation of a very popular musical. You might have heard of it. It was called Seven Brides for One Brother. I recently finished doing a rated X Mormon film. Yeah, but there was no sex. Strictly guilt.
This sets Cammie off, and she dumps Jonathan and prepares for her mission. Jonathan spends the next 6 weeks on a college tour. He comes home and goes on his own Enochian journey, where he realizes what he's already known. The church is true, and he loves Cammie, and wants to be married to her for time and all eternity. He rushes to meet her at the airport as she's leaving for Australia from the MTC. He confesses his love for her and begs for her to stay. She admits that she knows that they're right for each other, but that the Lord needs her in Australia. Fast forward one mission later. Jonathan and his friends are at the airport to welcome home an RM. But it's not Cammie. It's Dallin, home from his triumphant tour of duty in Boise, Idaho. We learn that along with Jonathan and Cammie, all the singles we were introduced to are happily married and serving dutifully in the church. And really, what else is there? Jonathan's the elders' quorum president and eventually becomes bishop of a singles ward.
All right, anyone for the closing prayer?
So did you guys see this in 2002 when it came out?
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. I was on my mission in 2002, but I saw it after I came home, and I was deprived of movies for 2 years. The only movie I saw on my mission was Finding Nemo, and I seriously thought it was the greatest movie ever. And then when I came back, this was one of the first ones I saw, and I even then I could recognize that it was horrible.
You recognize that it was horrible, huh?
There's funny lines in it, but this movie's good, kind of like Napoleon Dynamite is good.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Dude, this is not the same class as Napoleon Dynamite.
See, I see where he's
going with this.
I kind of think it is because I don't think anybody watches this and really enjoys watching it the first time. It's when you talk about it later, making fun of it, that it becomes more funny.
Idiot!
I thought Napoleon Dynamite was a class act. I love that.
You know,
sweet.
It's funny you say that because when a friend of mine watched Napoleon Dynamite, he came back to me and said, I don't know, I assume you got to be Mormon to think it's funny.
Gross!
Yeah, I think that the main similarity is that they both grow on you with time. In the end, they're both goofy and funny in their own way, not because of like their production value or something that's intrinsically amazing, but it's almost like a shared association that makes it more interesting to me in both cases.
Napoleon Dynamite is in a much higher league than Singles Ward because Napoleon Dynamite was consistent in the notes that it hit throughout. You know, it had a tone, and it was a bizarre random tone, but that was its tone, and it kept it all the way throughout.
Who's the only one here who knows the illegal ninja moves from the government?
Singles Ward, it was schizophrenic. It didn't know, did it want to be a yuck, laugh-it-up comedy, we're going to make fun of our Mormon culture, or did it want to become a seminary video? And they even kind of referenced it at one point. Boy, this sounds like a seminary video. But at the end, it got really cheesy, and especially if you pay attention to the music, you can hear the way that they're trying to manipulate the viewer's emotions. So let's set this up in case there's people out there that don't know what we're talking about. His girlfriend has left him. He thinks she's on her mission. He goes over to this non-Mormon girl's apartment, and he's going to get it on. He knows he's going to get it on, but the whole time, he's just not smiling. He just knows he's got this ominous feeling, probably because of all the heavy metal, like, guitar track music that they put in the background. He can hear it. He knows that the devil's near. Then she opens up the window, and he sees the view of the temple.
When he looks at the temple, there's that Halloween screen, that
Yeah, so he bails on her and drives up to the mountain and sits in his car and remembers his youth, all these seminal moments of Mormonism. Did it work for you guys when you saw it back in 2002? Did you get emotional when you saw this part and think about your own lives and these seminal moments growing up in the church?
Yeah. Who here is a pussy? Admit it.
I did. When I first saw it, yeah.
I was totally moved by it back in 2002 when I saw it. I mean, I'm honest. I'm not just being snarky here. That kind of stuff worked because I was psychologically trained for that shit to work.
It was touching, right, Jesse?
Oh my gosh, it was the funniest part of the movie.
Come on, you remembered your mission, and you thought, you know what? I do remember those good feelings, and you almost thought about embracing church.
I just think that the Singles Ward didn't have a consistent tone or theme to it.
But it was also really kind of going for this, we're kind of hipper than everyone else. We're the hip side of the Mormon church.
Yeah, it was bold in that way. You guys have to give it some credit for having a premise. So, okay, it's a bunch of active Mormons who believe this stuff, and they make a movie where the premise is a dude who's bad-mouthing the church, who's left it because it wasn't what it purported to be. It was 71 minutes before crying happened and emotions and manipulation of emotions happened. There was 71 minutes of self-referential humor and, you know, these active Mormons putting together a movie that where it's making fun of Mormonism, but it's okay because it's them making fun of themselves, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but it's just the culture of Mormonism that they're making fun of. They never really get into any of the doctrinal issues, and that's not why he isn't going to church either at the beginning.
Right. He doesn't stop going to church for the reasons that, you know, most of the people that we know have stopped going to church. But
here's the thing about this movie that, you know, it's trying to be a satire of Mormonism, right? What makes satire funny? Satire is funny because it's edgy and it's unapologetic. About what it's trying to make fun of. But these guys were trying to be edgy, and then they kept reeling back, and they'd be a little edgy, and then they'd reel back, and it was just...
Can you give me an example of edgy? Like, what do you mean by edgy?
I was living on the edge.
Yes, I currently have MTV blocked from my cable subscription. I'd like to unblock that, please.
Well, as edgy as I could get in Provo.
Like the videos. Like, they're trying to say, like, ooh, he goes and rents these rated R videos. And they're not even, like, bad rated R videos. It's, like, a slasher film or something. And
that, I mean, to me, that's not edgy.
That's his rebellion.
But, well, Well, the example I have is when he is a line you guys already brought up was when he said, "Oh, what? People are looking at you like, you know, our ancestors could handle four wives, and you can't even handle one." You know, that was kind of as close to edgy as they were willing to go, making fun of Mormon polygamy in our past.
No, people want to pretend it didn't exist, and so referencing that is, I guess, edgy for him to joke about, and it's something we get a joke about, right? Insiders get a joke about, but nobody else does.
There were a couple of other self-referential edgy things that you shouldn't do if you want to have a good standing with, you know, Peter Priesthood Mormons. And I know these aren't really edgy, but they could be in some circles. Like an overlooked, potentially controversial thing was when they show a woman bearing her testimony.
I just want all my roommates to know how much I love them with every fiber of my being.
It's all it's there to do is to make fun of the way people get up on Fast Sunday, which is the one Sunday per month where anybody in the membership can get up and share their feelings, and they totally show that and make fun of it. And yeah, and then they show people falling asleep in church while somebody's supposed to be sharing their innermost feelings. And I don't know, I remember as a believer when I watched it the first time, I was like, wow, that's kind of true sometimes, but you can't show that. Like, what was the purpose of that? Is that supposed to be funny? Because it, you know,
I'm rethinking this edgy comment, and I think that Will Swenson, who plays Jonathan, he was edgy. And especially the way that he would, like, he was very sarcastic,
yeah,
towards the other Mormons around him, and very dismissive, you know, like the scene where they all come to his door to fellowship him.
Hey man, our ward's going paintballing. We can really use another team member.
We're having a ward barbecue. Thought you might like some chicken.
Hi, we were having ward family night and baked cheesecakes. We thought you'd like some.
I knew what they were up to. I knew how to handle it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm lactose intolerant. Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm a vegetarian. I'm sorry, but convicted felons aren't allowed to handle handguns. But maybe paintball doesn't count. I could check with my probation officer.
That's probably my favorite part of the movie. And, you know, the way that he first interacts with the Cammie Giles when she calls him on the phone. And...
Yeah.
Hi, is this Jonathan?
Yeah.
Jonathan, this is Cammie Giles. I'm the new ward activities director. Well, we're having a ward talent night, and I was wondering if there was any way we could get you to volunteer your job skills. We could really
I'm sorry.
Use...
What was your name?
Cammie.
Cammie, do you have a job?
Yes, I'm a nurse's assistant at a convalescent home.
Tell you what, then, why don't you volunteer to come over to my place? You can change my bed sheets, feed me tapioca pudding, and give me a sponge bath.
Excuse me? I don't think that is an appropriate thing
exactly.
to say.
It's not appropriate, which is what I'm trying to say.
I'm sorry. I thought for a church activity...
And how often do you see me at church?
That's just pretty edgy, that his attitude there. But I think that the tragedy of the movie is that he has to lose it. And that edginess and that sarcasm is all seen as... a symptom of his divorce, his hurt feelings kind of thing.
Oh, and it's also light-mindedness and loud laughter. And that's inappropriate. You can't have that.
Does it also mean that Jack Mormons are funnier than believing Mormons?
Pretty much.
Who was more likable to you, Tom? Jonathan Jordan when he was edgy and sarcastic, or Jonathan Jordan when he was weepy?
The only few times I did laugh is like what Glenn said. And I'm no fan of agreeing with Glenn very often. Yeah,
stop those, it. Those, you love me.
I do, Glenn. those first edgy parts where he's really sarcastic.
Here's a question I have.
Go ahead.
What is it about Cammie that he would find so enticing?
Exactly.
Did you look at anyone else?
she was the hottest one there.
Her friend that would eat the Oreos off the car.
Anyone else that was a woman in the movie? Like, think back.
Well, I think that Allison, who was the bartender, was more appealing than...
She was.
...than Cammie.
Oh, I agree.
Cammie was... I think she was paid by the eye roll in this, because everything was like an affront to her sensibilities.
over serious about everything.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
Is that your whole thing? That you say whatever you want, and if it doesn't work to your advantage, then you say I'm just kidding?
No, I just have a hard time expressing my real feelings since the accident. I'm sorry about how things have played out, and I... Can we just start over?
Yeah, you know, I guess I should say I'm sorry, too. I mean, you seem like a nice enough guy. Maybe we could get together one night this week.
Yeah?
No, I'm kidding.
I'm really glad that we don't have a woman on the podcast.
Why?
I'm just saying. We're just talking about how who was hotter, and they're all nagging and eye rolling and everything.
Well, but she was.
I know.
I'm not saying that that's how women are. I'm just saying that's how.
That's what you just said. Those were your words, Glenn.
But she's just not interesting, and her personality is without.
No. But they set her up in the typical Mormon paradigm of, like, if she volunteers at an old folks' home and she looks half decent and she rolls her eyes every once in a while and is witty, perfect. That's the perfect woman for you.
Celestial Kingdom material, baby.
Right there, yeah.
So what are some of the other stereotypes that you guys picked up on?
There were the pickup lines from that one character, Deverl, who was over the top, the creepy can't get a break, can't get a date guy.
So is the spirit telling you the same thing it's telling me right now?
Yeah, get the hints.
But, you know, that touches on a reality in Mormon dating culture, where men will try to manipulate women by saying that they have a priesthood revelation, and how can you deny a priesthood revelation when, you know, I was told by the spirit that you're to be my wife. This kind of stuff happens all the time at BYU.
I don't know very many women to be like, oh yeah, you're so right. You have the priesthood and I don't. I'll date you.
But we'll hit on something else about the girl is if she prays about you and doesn't get an answer, that's like God rejecting you, which does go on, that's, right?
Oh yeah, that happens all the time.
So does anybody have any idea how much money this movie made?
According to what I'm looking at, it made $1,250,000 in the box office, and the budget was $500,000.
Pretty good, man. Profitable film.
So they had to pay at least some of those cameos, right? Like Dutcher and Steve Young and
I doubt it.
No, they didn't. They didn't pay Dutcher.
Go through all the cameos that you can remember.
Well, yeah, Wally Joyner was the bishop. Danny Ainge was the Sunday school teacher. Lavelle Edwards was the golfer at the putt and putt. Sean Bradley was the
auto mechanic.
Thurl Bailey was the polite black man in the airport. apparently Cammy's dad is the coach of fucking Utah football.
Used to be coach Ron McBride. He's McBride.
Thank you. Yeah. Steve Young was the fireside devotional speaker and
brother Niner.
And don't forget Chunga and Mister.
No, it wasn't. It was Jimmy Chunga and it was Kerry Jackson from X-96. They were the two police officers.
Don't forget Peter from the original Temple video. Gordon Jump was the asshole in the line.
And then the chick from the Real World was also.
Oh, that doesn't count.
Superdale. Superdale was made an appearance. You guys know
him? Oh, yeah, and Mitch English, because they have that extremely funny joke.
I am absolutely sure the Millennium Falcon can outrun the Enterprise.
Yeah, right. With just the hyperdrive?
Yeah!
Everybody knows you need at least a warp core.
Nerds of Utah.
Nerds of Utah. Come on, Bob.
And then Richard Dutcher. He was the neighbor.
Yeah, he was offended by his own movie.
How ironic. Oh.
Did you read some of the reviews? I thought they were actually kind of interesting. Deseret News. A word of advice to the makers of the Singles Ward. Celebrity cameos do not automatically equal labs, and neither do cliches, no matter how inside they are. That one nailed it for me as well.
Yeah, Jeff Weiss, he's a good critic, yeah.
Let's have a closing prayer, because that summed it up.
I thought it nailed it, actually.
Let's talk about, because, you know, to me, I said this in the pre-recording, that this was like a quaint foray into the simplistic Mormon mindset I used to have, where, you know, anything outside of living a good Mormon life leads to unhappiness, and there is only one way to live. And what does he do when he goes on that six-week tour when Cammy leaves him or breaks up with him and she's going on her mission? He drinks, he gambles, he tells jokes about Mormons, and he doesn't even have sex that you can tell. He just flirts with a co-ed at some college campus. But it's all the cliches of the only reason, logical reasons Mormons can come up with that anyone will leave the church is to do those, you know, things that aren't even sin to like a normal person.
And I think what you're touching on, Randy, the way that I saw it was that the filmmakers couldn't really escape their own Mormonness. Something which I hope doesn't really happen with us on this podcast. but I mean, you can't think outside of the parameters of Mormonism. And when they tried to get creative, they got these stupid things like bungee jumping your car, you know, that just don't really make any sense. The scene that was most telling to me was when they're playing miniature golf and she asks him about why he isn't married.
Okay, this is the part where things generally come to a crossroads. A divorced Mormon might as well be walking around with a factory recall notice on their forehead, like there's some kind of manufacturer's defect. I've already done the marriage thing.
You're married?
I guess it's not something I make a point of going around announcing.
Any kids?
Nope.
Well, people aren't perfect, Jonathan.
Wow. No judgmental expressions, no awkward pauses.
And I'm like, this is written by people who just don't see how judgmental of a statement that was. Don't worry, Jonathan. There's other failures, too.
Not just you.
Like, wow, she's awesome.
At this time in 2002, really what Mormon cinema was out there?
Well, God's Army came out in 2000. And I think that was probably like the high water mark of Mormon cinema. And then not that there is that much Mormon cinema out there. Frankly, I think Richard Dutcher's movies have probably been the best. But, you know, there was Singles Ward and some of the other ones, the RM that people have mentioned. And I mean, I just think it's just declined since then. So this is probably on the better end of the spectrum.
And Hale arguably killed it because they do this, which is, it's campy and it's, you know, it's trying to be funny, but then they just keep playing the same jokes in a different, kind of retold differently. The RM is the same jokes from Singles Ward, Home Teachers, which I sadly saw in the theater in Utah when I was visiting there.
That movie is atrocious beyond belief.
Okay.
This is basically, it's trying to be, Tommy Boy, like almost a road trip where they're home teaching the last day and everything goes wrong. It is an absolute.
They were all pretty much. I never did watch Church Ball. I never did see that.
Oh, dude, I can't believe someone brought up Church Ball. That was my last straw in Mormon cinema. I watched it on Thanksgiving a few years back and I thought, oh my God, Church Ball. Talk about a subject so rich with potential. And it was worse than it was like, and it was you can't even point to anything that was funny about it. It was written.
It can't be worse than Home Teachers. It can't be worse than Home Teachers.
I challenge you right now. Watch Church Ball. It is this to me was the worst movie I have ever experienced.
And it's got Ron Howard's brother in it. What's his name?
Clint.
Fred Willard?
Clint Howard.
I have a confession to make. During this whole craze of Mormon cinema, I was in kind of a screenwriting kick. Like I wrote screenplays as a hobby, and I wrote a Mormon movie called How to Marry a Mormon, which was loosely based on my Big Fat Greek Wedding. Like the concept of it, but like an outsider marrying him. I mean, nothing ever happened with the script. It just sat on my computer, but I wrote it and I kind of had these visions in my mind of like, if they can make this crap, maybe I can make mine. But that was it.
Yeah, my confession is a little different, but along the same lines, I remember I was on my mission when God's Army came out and I thought it was like this beacon of hope for the church to consume the whole world with its grand message of celestial glory. I really just thought this whole movement of Mormon cinema was going to be big. And God's Army was pretty good. And the follow-up, Brigham City, I think is even better. I still think it's a great movie to this day. And then The Singles Ward came out, which was the first comedy and sort of
derailed everything. Well, it didn't. So, it didn't explore, like, God's Army explored some real issues. You know, I mean, it got into these characters were real people in a real world, and the Singles Ward, it was just caricatures. Don't you think that like faithful Mormon filmmakers are kind of shackled by the reverence that you're supposed to put towards the church when they're making a movie?
Look what happened to Richard Dutcher. I mean, that's his whole story is about being shackled and being controlled. And, you know, he was controlled to the point where he basically can't make films anymore because he can't get the funding for them.
Yeah.
Well, so there's a ex-Mormon, but he's kind of proud of his Mormon heritage. His name's Levi Peterson. I'm sure some of you have heard of his book, The Backslider. Yeah. Well, when he was interviewed by John DeLynn, his conclusion was that in the context of true believing Mormonism, you cannot be truly artistic because you can't really explore humanity in all its depth, because everything has to be appropriate. Everything has to be faith promoting, and that does not produce good art.
Right.
And that's what happened in my opinion, to Mormon cinema.
And the Mormon cinema has to be just as correlated as the church. And you saw it with this film. You saw them do the same Sunday school seminary type cliched lessons, lessons, just manifested on the screen.
You think about what makes really good movie making, and there's got to be some kind of a conflict that's real and central that drives the story. And the conflict in the Singles Ward was that he was a comedian who told Mormon jokes. But that's the bread and butter of the movie.
That's exactly
right.
Yeah, and it wants it both ways. It wants to have the inside track of being able to make fun of itself, but then at the appropriate time, 71 minutes into the movie, that's the conflict.
That's the conflict.
Yeah, what the whole movie had been doing the whole time, now it's an issue because it's in the movie.
Like, I wondered if the context was different, because it's okay to tell jokes about Mormons to Mormons, but he was telling them to non-Mormons, and that's when you've got to put on your best face. You can't show any of the dirty sides, the ugly stuff, to non-Mormons.
Well, I really appreciated the movie, actually. All in all, I love how self-contained it is in terms of like a single reference towards my youth and my atmosphere or just the cultural upbringing I was part of. And if anybody wants to know like what was edgy, like we've been talking about, or what it was like to grow up in the church that is Mormonism, you pop in this movie. You might not enjoy it, but at least you'll get a better understanding of everyone on this podcast.
Grant Palmer is an author that wrote a book kind of, digging into what the Mormon church has become, or basically what the doctrine is founded on. And in his introduction, he says, Mormonism has become a mile wide and an inch deep. And that's what this movie was to me. It was a mile wide because there was nonstop Mormon joke. But none of those jokes went more than an inch deep.
That's a really good quote.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I did want to hit that last scene with her at the airport, because that was always probably my biggest pet peeve of the film. And I did like it in 2002, but I hated this part, the whole you got to have it both ways. Right. She not only gets married, but she does serve a mission. So they're not taking a side, because I think in Mormon culture that whole, is it good for a woman to go on a mission? Is it not? Which is preferred, getting married over a mission? And they punt on that and don't even want to be edgy and have her say, oh, yeah, I'm going to get married, or actually make a decision. It really is you get your cake and eat it, too. And that always just annoyed me.
Well, and this was something that I questioned in your introduction, as to whether or not she was struggling over this idea of marrying Jonathan and going on a mission. Cause I didn't see that as a struggle at all. It was just like, this is what I'm doing.
Well, she kind of references it after his very edgy comedy routine.
I've been praying the last few weeks about whether going was actually the right thing to do. tonight, I guess I got my answer. Didn't I?
This was her answer from God. That's a classic example of Mormon epistemology, you know? You have this big decision, and just something happens that's just something that happens, and you just interpret that as a divine, supernatural answer from God.
All right, anything else on this film?
Well, I was just going to say, did anybody else like watch this and then afterwards? I mean, some of it was hard to get through, but then afterwards think, you know, for a second, just the cultural aspects of it, just the goofiness, just the like that lifestyle. Somehow I had like some sort of nostalgia, or I was like, that was me.
So I've got to know, Bob, who did you identify with most then? I mean, because you were talking about this as being like a microcosm of your childhood, your youth.
No, it wasn't a singular character. It was just you know, the dances, the hoagie yogi, the way that you answer or ask people on dates, the goofy girl that asks you that you can't say no to, the guys that get married after only meeting at a hayride, the girl
a week earlier,
the girl who isn't even in college, that she's snuck into a singles ward. I've seen that, or I've experienced that firsthand.
I gotta say one thing though, that this movie nailed it. It was square. It was right on the screws. I got called, and I'm from Los Angeles, California. I got called to a mission 350 miles away, Tempe, Arizona. So when this guy gets his call to Boise, Idaho, he doesn't react the way I did. I threw a temper tantrum, like you guys can imagine. And I had to go to a reception, a Mormon wedding reception that night, and word got out that I got my mission call. And over, I had to have the same experience he had in Deseret Book with that lady.
I just need something simple for my mission.
Oh, how exciting. Where are you going?
Boise.
Well, isn't that nice?
So where are you going? And I say Tempe, Arizona, and the look on her face was the exact look I got over and over on the wedding reception. Oh, that's nice, as they try to smile through their awkwardness. And then they'll say things like, well, at least you'll get all your mail. At least you'll get fed every night. You know, that's not why I go on a mission. I can get fed and get mail when I'm at home.
Maybe God would have sent you somewhere else if you wouldn't have thrown a temper tantrum, dude.
Exactly. He knew your true character.
He knew in advance that you were going to throw the temper tantrum, and so that's why he called you there.
Touché. You had something to learn, Elder. You had something to learn.
Touché, brother.
So then nobody related to it like me then. It sounds like you guys all just want to stick with it sucked.
Well, I knew a few guys like the Franklin Planner guy.
See, that's the thing about the Franklin Day Planner, is that it's so much more than just a to-do list. I mean, it's a wider scope of longer range goals that funnel down into daily, weekly, and monthly tasks.
How about you, Elder?
I met this one gal, Julia.
Oh, flip, she's a cutie.
Yeah, but she uses a day timer, and I just don't know how I feel about that.
That was a terrible stereotype, right, Glenn?
Yeah, when I saw this when it first came out, I felt more the way that you're describing, Bob. You know, I felt that nostalgia, especially, you know, that the touching scene. It really did touch me, and it made me think about my own life in those moments growing up in the church. But I didn't really have the singles experience that was depicted on the screen, so I didn't feel a lot of nostalgia there.
Yeah, it was the same for me. I never really attended a singles ward, so it was, I don't know, some of that stuff I could kind of imagine what it would have been like, but it was didn't it, really connect with me.
Really? But the singles ward isn't really the point, in the sense that most of what I saw as a nostalgic association I experienced in high school, those dances at a singles ward, it's the same flavor at a high school dance.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying I didn't get the movie. I mean, I got the jokes and all of that, but there's a different dynamic between, you know, the elders quorum and the fellowshipping and the guy who's, you know, suddenly divorced and comes back to a singles ward. There's more of that goes on.
And I mean, again, I think that it was more Utah Mormon culture than it would, and I mean I grew up in Arizona, so it's not that far away, but it felt different to me. It didn't feel exact, like
Well, my wife said to me, as I was watching this abomination with her, and she said, because there's that scene where there's like the three girls outside the dance.
Did you hear? Joel Jensen asked Amanda Jones out.
Seriously?
That is so unfair.
She's like only been in the ward a week.
Like their seniority for how long you've been in the ward.
How that was a funny comment. Girl come in.
Yeah.
But the thing about
my wife said that was pretty much spot on.
Yeah. The thing about being in a singles ward, and I wasn't ever in a singles ward per se, but I was in a BYU ward, which is pretty much the same thing.
Right.
Is I remember as a believer being in a singles ward, going, you know, I'm here to check out who I'm going to marry. And you are not there really for church as much as you are like catting for your eternal companion. And I remember when I got married and I didn't have to go to singles ward and I went to family ward, I'm like, oh, fine, I can avoid, enjoy church for what it is. And that's when I realized church sucked too.
Yeah.
All right. So who hated it?
I hated it.
I hated it.
I didn't hate it back in the day, but I hated it last night, dude. I hated it last night.
So Jesse and Tom haters.
I don't hate it. I just think that it is bad.
Well, you're like a given. You don't hate anything, right?
It gets a thumbs down. It gets a thumbs down.
I gotta tell you, I hate to do this, but I found it endearing even last night.
There you go, Matt. Yeah,
that's what I love talking about.
I laughed at the stupid parts. I hated the cliches and I hated the stereotypes and the Cammy character sucked, and you know the part about slippery slopes pissed me off, but I actually thought the Mormon culture stuff was funny in this film, and I'll watch it again, and I even liked the music. There you go.
Oh, well, something about the music. Like every single song is a Mormon song.
Popcorn popping on the apricot tree.
Yeah, but it's done with a grunge / alternative music twist.
Right.
Which gives it a pseudo edge.
Yeah. Like when they go on their date and they're at this restaurant and there's a woman that's singing live. It's a
teach me to walk in the light of his love.
Yeah.
All right, dude. I bought the soundtrack. That's how lame I am.
Stop it.
I do. I own the soundtrack.
Hey, when, like last night after you watched it you're like, I'm going to buy the soundtrack.
No, back in the early 2000s.
Hand over your man card, Matt. Hand it over.
I know, right? It's gone.
Yeah, I think I might have to change my vote. Maybe I do hate it because it was just painful.
Well, I haven't said what I thought about the movie.
Oh, please go, Randy. throw your temper tantrum.
No, I absolutely love this as a believer. I have no shame in saying I loved it as a believer because I was one of those Mormons that was really irritated at the Mormon culture. I have a tattoo I've had since 96. I always had facial hair. But I watched this the second time, basically last night and today, with basically a condescending bemusement. And there was an enjoyment in and of itself with the condescending bemusement. That's all I have to say.
So you're like on the fence.
I'm kind of on the fence because, like Matt, I found it a little nostalgic. But at the same time, it was just such a simplistic way to look at the world. And so I guess I find it nostalgic in that, wow, I used to look at the world like that.
So
too.
The thumbs downers win because we've got Jesse, Glenn, Randy, you're on the fence.
I got a thumb sideways, yeah.
Tom is way down, and then you've got me and Matt. We're thumbs up. All right.
Well, I mean, I wanted to see this movie, but I didn't have access to it. And so I got on the classifieds, and there was somebody selling it for $1, and I thought that was too much, so I went to the library and got it.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Oh, shoot.
$1 is too much.
So wait, you went on the classifieds. You went on the classifieds looking for it, and when you found it, and it was for $1, that was too much? So what were you expecting it to be for?
Yeah, I snubbed my nose. I'm like, $1? Are you serious? For a DVD?
Bet you spent more than $1 worth of time looking for it on the classifieds.
Yeah, exactly.
Touché.
How much gas did you spend going to the library?
Which is probably further than wherever you would have bought it for $1.
Maybe I was already going to the library. You ever think of that? You think of that?
No.
Yeah. I would never think of you.
Yeah.
Those of you who have seen Book of Mormon, The Journey, Volume 1.
Yeah.
Which one do you take, this one or Book of Mormon?
Are you serious?
It's not even close.
Yeah. That movie was awful.
Way better.
Yeah. This is way better than that. All right, wait, I'm trying to bring you guys back to my side.
There you go. Yeah.
Lobbying.
Six thumbs up all of a sudden. Woohoo!
That's right.
I haven't seen the Book of Mormon movie, whatever, music.
Oh, it's awesome. You got to check that out.
Okay. Dude, Matt, you could do that with anything. It's like, compared to this, it's not so bad.
When you compare that to
the Holocaust, I mean, that's nothing compared to the Holocaust. That's not so bad.
So you're comparing it to Schindler's List. Is that what you're saying, Randy?
When I was at the library, I saw this movie and, of course, all the other really bad Mormon-y movies. And I saw one called The Work and the Story. And I remember...
Yeah, well, they did try to pull out the Work and the Glory movies to make those books into a movies, and I mean they keep pulling, kind of marketing this whole Mormonism to Mormons, and they just don't buy. That's what I think is so interesting, is they really don't ever.
No, Mormons
kind of
are
latch onto it.
Mormons are cheap. They'll look something up online in the classifieds and go, a buck? I'm gonna go to the library.
That's because they're all paid 10% of their income to the church.
True.
All right. Well, that's Singles Award. Who's got the closing prayer?